What have we in our society come to worship? What have we come to love, to venerate, to adore, and to revere? And what have we come in our community, in our culture, to do that we would devote our lives to? Big questions. We're going to take those questions on in a moment. But there's another question that I want to add to this. For those who are committed Christians, what have you moved into your life that is cluttering up your worship with Jesus? What have you drawn into your very homes that is cluttering up your worship of Jesus? A little background that I mentioned earlier. The passage I'm about to read is from the Gospel of John, and John wrote the Gospel from the post-resurrection perspective. John's emphasis is on the incarnation of God in Jesus. John's Gospel is rich with double meanings of words that have material meanings, spiritual meanings, and prophetic meanings. The Gospel of John is full of double symbolism. John sets the entire story into the context of the fulfillment of the messianic hopes of the Hebrew people. John sets the story of Jesus around the various aspects of festive celebrations and of prophecy, the meaning of which is often hidden from us, but was well known by Jesus and the people. Hear these readings. After the wedding in Cana, he went down to Capernaum along with his mother, brothers, and disciples, and stayed several days. And when the Passover feast, celebrated each spring by the Jews, was about to take place, Jesus traveled up to Jerusalem. Now he found the temple teeming with people, selling cattle and sheep and doves, and the loan sharks were also in full strength. So Jesus put together a whip out of the strips of leather and chased them out of the temple, throwing the tables over, stampeding the sheep and the cattle, upending the tables of those loan sharks, and spilling their coins left and right. And he went particularly over to the dove merchants, and he says, "Get out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a shopping mall." That's when his disciples remembered the scripture. "Zeal for your house consumes me." We have Old Testament, New Testament. These people had Old Testament divided up into a couple of components, but they had their psalms. They had their songs. They had their music and the words. And they would remember the songs they would sing when the song verse would say, "Zeal for your house consumes me." Now the Jews were upset. They said, "What credentials can you present to justify this?" And Jesus answered, "Tear down the temple, and in 3 days I'll put it back." They were indignant, for it took 46 years to build this temple, and he was going to build it in 3 days. But Jesus wasn't talking about the construction of a temple. He was talking about his body as the temple of God. And John writes, "Later, after he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered all of this that took place, and they put two and two together and believed that what was written in the scriptures had happened, and what Jesus had said also happened." Now, I take the view that this cleansing of the temples He is two events. John puts it at the beginning of Jesus' ministry after the wedding in Cana. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke put this event at the end of his ministry. These are bookends. For Jesus records this visit as a challenge to the temple authorities. You know, Jesus arrived at this temple at the beginning of his ministry. I'm sorry, too soon. Too soon. I'm giving nods when I shouldn't. That Jesus had come to the temple to replace it as the place to find God. Now, the temple was the center place of worship for the Hebrew people. It was a place of worship where people would find God's presence, they would seek God's blessings, and they would seek God's protection for their life. The temple was an earthly model of a heavenly reality. The temple was a symbol of God's victory over his enemies, and the temple was a symbol of God's settlement, God's presence with his people. And this guy shows up to replace the temple in all its functions, not only for the Hebrew people, but for all people. This is the beginning of Jesus' ministry. For Jesus was to become the center of worship. Where Jesus was to become and recognize as God's very presence. Jesus was to become known as the one that would be giving blessings. It's Jesus who we come to for protection. It is Jesus who is a reality of heaven. It is Jesus who is the true symbol of God's victory and peace. All these events take place. And there was this particular passage from Malachi. I want you to read this with me. There's two slides. Together with one voice say, then suddenly the Lord you are seeking will come to his temple. The messenger of the covenant whom you desire will come. But who can endure the day of his coming? Who can stand when he appears? For he will be like a refiner's fire or a launderer's soap. He will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. He will purify the Levites and refine them like gold, silver. Then the Lord will have men who will bring offerings in righteousness. John and the people around, as these events took place, would recognize this prophecy from Malachi. Now, John not only lays things out of fulfilling Malachi's prophecy, but again, that song from 69, for the zeal of the house consumes me. That's ringing in people's ears and in the disciples' ears. John goes on to record that the disciples reflected back on these dramatic actions of their masters, and they became more and more convinced. Remember, they're looking at the crucifixion, they're looking at the resurrection, and then they're thinking back to what has taken place over those 3 years, and they say, Jesus not only revealed his energy and fearlessness in taking on the religious authorities, and we call it anger, righteous anger. Nope. It's authority. True authority. To rescue those who are being prevented from getting to God. He's exercising authority to rescue the people. Jesus' mission was far more than merely negative or destructive. He had come to make it possible for a more direct approach to God. The temple had been set up to be a place to find God. But this is what Jesus offers us. You'll know it from Matthew 11. So let us say this again. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and walk with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. That's what Jesus is offering. And now remember the beginning words of John, where John writes, "The true light that gives light to every person has come into the world. And to all who receive him, to those who believe in his name, he gives the right to become children of God." He's offering us a life of grace, a life under his tutelage, and he's offering us the opportunity for those that believe in his name, he gives to the right to become children of God. So what does it mean to be a child of God? What longing in you would be satisfied by knowing that you are special in God's sight? If you are a child of God, know that you are special. And that longing and desire that is deep within you will be satisfied by God, for he sees you special and unique in his eyes. I make light of this at times, but I want you to hear this. Joe, you're Jesus' best friend. James, you can call on the Lord, for you are his best friend. You're a child of God. Jesus' death and our acceptance of his death and resurrection is the pure worship that replaces the need for any sacrifice. We were created in the image of God. We were breathed life into by the Holy Spirit. And by Paul's words, we are able to become a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, for through our spiritual act of worship and a recognition of Jesus. Now, Jesus had come to challenge the unspiritual nature of worship that had taken place and had taken over the temple, where there was power and politics and position and profit. Kind of sounds familiar. Where power, politics, and position and profit push out the grace of God and the purpose of God. Next page. Now, through Jesus' death and resurrection, you have been invited to become a child of God. That's from the Gospel of John. That you have a life and have it abundantly. Gospel, John 10:10. And that collectively, as the church, you are the community of faith, which we call God's temple. Paul's writing in 1 Corinthians. So you're a child of God, you're called to have an abundant life, and collectively, as the church, the community of faith, you are all God's temple. To be a child of God, to be living an abundant life, to be collectively the temple of God, contrasts with the power, the politics, the positions, and the profits of corrupt temples. The big line of the whole sermon. There's more, but I like this one. To know Jesus, you know God. To know God, you must know Jesus. That's as simple as it gets. If you want to know God, get to know Jesus. And once you know Jesus, you know God. The question I asked at the beginning is, what temples have we erected, constructed, and raised that leads us away from our true worship of God? Do you recognize some of these temples? Time! Rushing here, rushing there. Where's my cell phone? Where's my iPad? I have an appointment. I'm texting. And something I was introduced to and I'm totally scared of is messaging through Facebook. I got texting down, and then there's this other thing. And I got to keep in touch with other people. Well, why can't they send me an email? No, well, they don't email anymore. Why can't they send me a text? Well, they don't text anymore. They send you a message through Facebook. Time. Oh, well. How many are going to watch the Oscars tonight? Okay. Another temple. It's called entertainment. And then, manna. Money. Got to have money. Power first. Never go home without power. Because at home, your wife will tell you to leave it alone. Oh, can we come back? Love. Well, we've trivialized love, or we've turned it into lust. And when I looked for video clips, pictures on lust, I went, ooh, I can't even let my wife know I'm looking at these. So I stayed with the cartoon. But we've turned love into lust. And then ego. It's all about me. It's all about me. Really, it's all about me. Oh, this baby feels beautiful. And then success, climbing the ladder of success. Jesus stands in opposition to these counterfeit temples. He stands in opposition to what these temples have become. Remember your scriptures. Remember what you have been taught. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. It still holds true. Through the incarnation, through the crucifixion, through the resurrection, Jesus dwells with us to this very day. And by His Spirit, we have the opportunity to live by His power. Incredible temple, eh? He's present with us everywhere. He is God. And that by His Spirit, we have the opportunity to live by His power. So Jesus offers us a new way to worship, to relate to God. He offers us a better way than those false temples. Now, the second question is, those of us who are confessing Christians, and those who may be just on the start of the journey and the pilgrimage of being Christians, I have to ask this question. Okay, you don't recognize those as places of temple. They are tempting, but no, I don't. I come here Sunday morning. I get filled up here, and I head off into the week with a good charge. But what do I clutter my home with that is keeping? What have I cluttered my home with? So what's in your library? What are you reading? What's on your Kindle? What's on your iPad? What are the e-books? What are the magazines? What are you reading? What are you studying? Are you studying anything? Media. Oh boy. What is it, 500-600 channels on the internet or television or YouTube, or it goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. What are you peeking at? What are you dining on? Yes, with regards to food. But what are you dining on with regards to your mind, your heart, and your soul? What are your desires? And in your workshop, in your home, I place that in the category of gifts and talents. What are you doing with what God gave you? Are you using them? Or are you putting them under a bushel? What's your recreational habits? That was a little close to home when I had to work on that one. Maybe walking and exercise would be a better thing for me. But with recreation comes, where do I hang out? Where do I literally hang out in the community? What do I find amusing? And my family relationships, are they strong? Are my relationships with my friends strong? Do I actually see them in person? Or do I do this thumb thing? And then what's in our closets? Whoa, sensitive topic. So what's our hang-ups? What's our fears? And are we doing anything constructive to deal with them? John Wesley said that if you don't preach a sermon 9 times, you haven't preached it. Jesus came to turn over the tables. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I don't particularly want to turn the tables over in your lives, but I want to give you a suggestion. You're in the period of Lent. You're heading towards Easter. Within you is the Easter experience of crucifixion and resurrection. Gazing at Jesus' feet with a desire to follow him, hear his words. Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burnt out on religion? Are you burnt out on false temples? Come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live life freely and lightly. We're post-crucifixion. We are post-resurrection. Maybe in some context, Jesus might turn the tables on you. But my expectation is he would rather invite you to walk with him, to spend time with him, and let him whisper into your ears and be your everything.